what college and many other educational institutions do and offer is a framework for accountability. And I think that works.
Entrepreneurs love talking about business. However, it's no secret there's also so many things they love talking about which are not about business. In the Sea of Business podcasts, none of your business is a refreshing break, a surprise kiss, an afternoon fizz. Through Carla Singson's cheeky and radical takes on mundane and principle-heavy topics, you'll gain insights that guarantee you something to talk about on your first Tinder date, while visiting grandma, or if you want to impress your new boss. Big thanks to Proximity Outsourcing for sponsoring this episode. Outsource the most tedious tasks in your business, such as data management, appointment setting, and creatives, for less than $12 an hour, fully managed. Visit ProximityOutsourcing.com for more info. Tired of business podcasts? Tune in to None of Your Business. New episodes weekly.
Good morning, everyone. This is Carla for another episode of hopefully your favorite non-business podcast for business people, None of Your Business. So we're here to talk about something that's definitely very dear to my heart, a topic that I've thought of for so many years, and I definitely have some, you know, deep feelings about this. And so we're going to talk about college education, how people learn and how entrepreneurs learn, and if college is really still worth it, you know, what we think about it and all that. And I have another super special guest today, of course, Alex Bose studied practical entrepreneurship for the past 7 years through the lens of product management with early stage startups. And he's also about to celebrate the 1 year anniversary of the opening of his first venture, which is a party hostel called Why Not Rooftop on the Caribbean coast of Mexico. This is actually one of my favorite places to hang out here in Playa del Carmen. So I'm super happy and excited to have Alex here. Alex has a background in design and conversion optimization, but his bread and butter is in building and developing teams and talent. On the side, he teaches college courses in product management and user experience design. Welcome, Alex. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. And I'm definitely so thrilled to have this conversation with you. So I think this is your first year teaching college? And how's your experience so far?
It's not my first year. I taught college as a part-time job after work and on the weekends starting in 2019. Mm-hmm. And I did it for I think a year and a half, and then when COVID hit, actually the last day of class was when they shut down the campus. I was at UT Austin. Mm-hmm. So I just had all the students over to my place and just got a keg and gave them their certificates at my house. I came back to it recently, just because, you know, the business is more automated than it's ever been before. And so I have some spare time and I love it. It's so much fun.
That's right. That's great. And for all of our listeners, this is actually how I found an opportunity to talk about this topic. I also taught college about, 12 years ago. In a university in the Philippines. If you live in the Philippines, it's called Ateneo de Davao. And Ateneo is one of the best business schools there. And it was a great time. It was a great time. I was super young. However, at that time, I was also a little burnt out, you know, trying to start my own business and then having to do that. But my optimism came from the fact, you know, even though it was tiring, it came from the fact that I really, really loved my college life. So what about you, Alex? Did you go to college? Did you enjoy college? Yes or no? And why or why not?
I enjoyed it. That's for sure. did I enjoy it for? Depends on what reasons you enjoyed it for. I guess I'll like put that out there, right? I went to Texas Christian University. Mm-hmm. And most people, when they hear that, they're like, oh, a religious school. It's not. It's just like any other school in Texas where there's a good amount of, partying and there's a good amount of alcohol. But it's not like a crazy party school, like I'd say like Santa Barbara, Chico in California or whatever, but like it definitely had a lot of fun there. In terms of my education though, I've talked with some friends about this, and we always, several of us have felt like there was something missing. And it wasn't until sort of recently when I really dove into entrepreneurship and I realized what that was. And it had more to do about me. I mean, I wouldn't say more, I would say it entirely had everything to do with me than it did with the school.
Right. So what did your hunch say? What did you think was missing? Like how many years after college, looking back, what did you think was missing?
I just wasn't ready. I just wasn't ready for a career. And I don't think that has any, again, like has to do with age. I think it would have to do with grit and discipline and all that stuff. I didn't really learn that until I was like 30, really, until I was 29 maybe. And I didn't, because I didn't have that established, neither did I have a direction really. I wouldn't say I had a career. After I graduated, I had jobs. I was kind of floating and not really paying attention to where I was going. I was just kind of more like I was floating, not swimming, I guess I'll put it that way.
Right,
Um,
right.
so I read, I actually read Angela Duckworth's book Grit. And at least, I mean, you can get all the takeaways from that book just from the one word title. It's like that's sort of the secret to anything. And I've read a sh I began reading a ton after that and realizing that in my career I didn't really have any upward mobility. And where I was and what I was doing, I was a creative director at an ad agency and as a producer for building websites and stuff. And I just realized I gotta figure this out. And that sort of paying attention and spending time to craft my career and craft my self and my discipline and all of that was the impetus of it all. And no one taught me that. No one told me this is important in college or beforehand. Like my parents didn't. Like nobody says that. So that's what I think was missing. I mean, again, not necessarily about college, but just missing from my life in general.
Yeah, no, I definitely hear you. I feel like college is a lot of hate, like lately, especially in the entrepreneur world, because it's expensive and there's no promise of anything really. Like, I mean, they kind of talk about it, like, oh, if you go to college and then this is like the path for you. And of course, there's jobs and there's careers that would require a college education or a bachelor's degree. But I think I think college is also not properly like marketed. For me personally, I enjoyed college. I also had the opportunity to go into it super early. I entered college at 15 and so I was done by 19. And I think that
Nice.
at that time in my age, that was the best thing that I could do, really. I mean, who knows? I could also like apprentice for Bill Gates, probably would be better. But in my opinion, I feel like because of the introspection that I got in college and trying to think of myself first instead of just following what they tell you to do, that really made it meaningful because I spent a lot of time in the extracurricular activities. I spent a lot of time in the library just reading. Like my grades weren't my world, and I had a social life. Like I had a boyfriend. I feel like it was very intentional, and I'm happy about that. If I was to change about, how college is marketed, I would definitely say that no one should like outwardly say that, go to college so you can have a direction in life. Like I think have a direction in life and then take whatever you can from college to help with a direction, right?
And I also, I enjoyed, all of that was to say, like, that was the thing that was missing from college. That one thing, it's like, hey, you got to pay attention to crafting yourself in direction, all of that. And college doesn't teach that, doesn't promise that. At
Yeah.
least mine didn't. And because I was going through the motions, like I felt like I missed out on what could have been a better college experience, a better educational college experience, I'll say. But
Right.
I'm really curious about you and what you like. Let me put it this way: had I come to that realization earlier in life, everything like I would, it would have been. I feel like a lot would be different. Not to say that I didn't learn things in college, and I still draw on a lot of the things that I learned. I mean, I learned my love for design from a professor that I still hold really dear, and I still don't stay in touch with that guy. But
Yeah.
how did you? It sounds like you discovered that early, like really early. How did this? How did you? Is that true? And if so, how did you get into college? Like at 15, how did you decide on all this at 15, such a young age?
I know it was pretty crazy. I feel I'm also trying to backtrack how I got into that realization. But I think I have a like a sliver of memory. On my first year in college, I was super young, and my parents were pretty old school, and they wanted me to just have good grades. You make it to the dean's list, that is success, period. Like nothing else. Dean's list, that's it. And so I did that, and so I made it to the dean's list. My parents were happy, but I realized that I wasn't like happy, and I just realized, actually, I'm just doing this for my parents. And also at that time, I really wanted to be a writer, but my parents were like, there's not a lot of money in creative writing. So to be safe, maybe take up business, but somewhere where you can still kind of write. And so that's why I took up marketing. It's such a naive thought, obviously. Now we're in marketing, we're doing like conversion optimization, we're doing,
And
yeah, we're
ChatGPT
just.
writes all your copy.
Exactly. No, not still no. ChatGPT still can't write copy like me, but I would say like I realized I wasn't happy, and I thought, you know what, I'm not gonna, as long as I don't fail, I should just do whatever I want and show my parents another way that they can be proud of me. So obviously, you know, this is very like Asian culture. Background, like, you know, really, really wanting to make your parents happy and honoring them and honoring the hard work that they put. And so I did sports and I did like public speaking competitions. And when I kind of had success in those things, my parents kind of just let me do whatever I want. And so that let me really enjoy college and start being more intentional about my
Yeah,
experience.
that is the word, being intentional about it. I think you just hit it on the head, right? Like, and it's interesting, I did very much the same thing in sort of like wanting to please my parents. Like, well, I have a similar experience in wanting to please my parents, but going to college for me was net, it wasn't even a discussion, it was just expected. Like to
Right.
me, honestly, I remember having a conversation with my friends that I believed, truly believed, that college was 13th, 14th, 15th, and 16th grades. Like I thought everybody went. That's just how it was.
Yeah.
And then when I figured that out, like, oh, I don't have to go. It was like too late. I'm already like enrolled. I'm like, guess I'm doing this. Like, why would I not do this? You know? So yeah.
Yeah, I really wanted to highlight, you know, obviously like that intention and you even like mentioning your regrets, because if these things are communicated to kids at before, not as, but before they enter college, then
Yeah.
they can at least that have better information to make the decision. And then when you get into entrepreneurship, if you're one of these people that will not go the conventional way of having a job, having a career, and when you decide to be an entrepreneur, which is like most of our listeners, which it's an unconventional route, and then you hear these people saying, oh, but what about like Bill Gates or Mark Zuckerberg or whoever? These kids are dropouts, so I don't really need college. But also it's like, well, you're different, like you're not them. You know, you're
Yeah.
I think a lot of people like oversimplify it too.
Yeah. Well, that's our entire world, right? It's a soundbite universe now. So, I mean, but yeah, I totally agree. I think so. Let me piggyback on that for a second. I
Mm-hmm.
used to volunteer with and serve on the board for a youth organization called E4 Youth that connected underprivileged kids, but specifically creative kids, with the creative arts industries. So, like designers, photographers, copywriters, the weirdos in high school. I was one with like advertising agencies. Places that need those kinds of people, right? Because when you're a doctor, lawyer, engineer, your path forward is very straightforward to understanding what you need to do to get into those careers. But for the other 99% of us, it's not clear. And for entrepreneurs, it's even less clear. So it was with those kids, and the question that I really have, and I've still questioned this, like how, I hate that there is not a straightforward answer to this question, but how do you inspire inspiration? How do you get someone, especially at a younger age, where I think it's the most valuable? Like, you're a great example of like understand, like being able to in be intentional about what you want to do and going to college so early and all of that. But like, how do I instill that in these kids who are in the eighth grade and in high school? That's tough. And I think it's different from for all of us. Like, there's a handful of examples, but if we knew the answer to that question, we would all be billionaires by now. But like,
Right. I know.
it's a tough one. And yeah, and again, I think it's different for everyone, and it's up to all of us. Oh, there goes my bourbon. It's up to all of us to figure that out for ourselves. And but I still like, what's the catalyst? What's the spark to get someone to start caring about that?
Yeah, I feel like when you're a kid also, we use the term kid very loosely here. Maybe kid like somewhere between I would say like 7 to 15, right? That's kind of like 7 to 18. That's kind of like your decision time to go to college or figure out whatever you want or what do you want to, who do you want to be when you grow up? And I feel like it, at that age, there should be a lot more emphasis on in also like encouraging kids to go after their dreams or just activities that they want, for example. Right? Like your kid might not be the next tech entrepreneur, but they could be the next best, the next fencer, Olympics like fencer or something, or a musician. I feel like traditional school is very limited in encouraging these other paths.
Oh, true. And you know what's also interesting is like that's what they say. Well, I don't know if that's what they say. This is what I was told when I got to college. Like, yeah, you have to do all these electives so you can figure out what you want to do with your life, but also declare a major before you get here.
Isn't that weird?
Right? It's so ass backwards, it's crazy. But yeah, but don't worry, you can switch your major. So I need to pay you money for taking all these, but like taking classes towards this major that you're telling me that I most likely will change by the end of the whole thing. It's like crazy. Anyway, but going back to what you're saying about kids, like, yes, I agree. And I think what's missing from that, I think it's true. We need to definitely do that. And I think it's so important for parents to get their kids out and discovering new things and in order for them to understand what they care about. But also that's missed. I think the intentionality of it is crucial. And that's what I think I was missing most. It's like, you're not just like doing this. I mean, play is important and all that, but like, there needs to be a kind of like, especially on the parent side, like a little bit of detective work to say, like, well, what do you like about this? And what, to help the guide them to their, to help give them direction towards their direction, right?
Right. And also, I remember in college, I was also a little lucky because I had these professors that made a lot of really good points. Like, for example, I had this philosophy professor who was incredibly like difficult. Like he had a reputation of having a class of 40, and for every class he would only pass one person. Like that's his
What?
reputation. I know, I'm not kidding. Yeah. So, yes.
That
And
sounds like a curmudgeon of a professor right there.
I know,
Like,
actually it is a little narcissistic and kind of like I'm so cool. You're not cool enough for me. So I'm just going to pass one person. So there is a kind of a version of that, ongoing kind of like what we think of him. But also I remember this statement he said very vividly, and he said,
you don't really go to college to learn. You go to college to learn how to learn. And that is what you take for the rest of your life. And so he explained that when college teaches you, like, say, biology, law, religion, philosophy, theology, like different things at the same time, algebra, it doesn't mean that you will need all of this to succeed. But he says college is teaching you to learn about different things and help your brain kind of move in that way. And yeah. I thought that was really, like, super meaningful, and it really made me appreciate college more. But that was he was a quite a difficult person.
Yeah, I remember hearing that as well. The college teaches you how to learn how to learn, but at the same time, I think I think it's different for everybody. And that while that may be true for some people, not everybody needs college to learn how to learn. They could also get it some other way. And I think, like, a lot of people look up to the ones that buck convention and are still successful, like the dropout entrepreneurs that you just mentioned, but that doesn't mean that it can't still be helpful.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So how many years have you been an entrepreneur, and what would you say are the top two ways for you to learn right now? Things that are useful to your business.
Yeah, so I guess I've always wanted to start my own business and tried a few times, but focused on the wrong things early on, and then did the career thing. And once I switched to product management, which is I mean, they call it mini CEOing, right? As like the slang term for it, which is, a lot of PMs don't really like that, but it's as close as you can get to entrepreneurialism without actually doing it, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing that for 7 years. 7 years? Yeah, ish. And then we're only just now celebrating the 1 year anniversary of opening this establishment. We were under construction for, I don't know, 6-ish months prior, so a year and a half now, I guess. And I want to go back, before I answer your other question of, like, what's the best way for entrepreneurs to learn, I want to go back to what you said a second ago, like, college is for, and your professor's saying it, you know, you're here to learn how to learn. I think there's another big, huge part of not just college education, but also any kind of education, graduate, boot camps, whatever. I think a lot of people are paying in order for someone else to hold them accountable, right? You're paying for someone to say, you need to show up here at this time and do this homework and do these tests, and in order to achieve a grade so that we can give you this grade. Like, that's the whole, like, otherwise you can just learn it on your own time. Like, everything is basically learnable online for free. If you spend enough time finding it, right? You can find the books, you can find free courses on Udemy, YouTube, whatever the case is. But I think that college and what college and many other educational institutions do and offer is a framework for accountability. And I think that works to hold you accountable. However, if you need to pay someone else to hold you accountable, you're not going to make a great entrepreneur. And I learned that the hard way. I think that college is good for learning how to learn and all of that, but, like, the accountability and the intentionality of all of, like, the direction you're going in and all that stuff, I don't think it's that great for that kind of stuff. I mean, it works for accountability. It doesn't work for entrepreneurship. I mean, you can still do it. You're a great case. You're a great example. I think I'm a great example, except I didn't learn that in college, right? I learned the accountability thing on my own way later. So I guess that is a very long answer to your question, but the short answer is, You can learn anything anywhere, and getting involved in the groups that I think, here's what I would do if I needed to learn something new or wanted to start a new venture, which I'm looking into some now. I'm going to find the people who did it before me, and I'm following them on Instagram or Twitter or whatever, and I'm going back in time by like years, as long as they had their account? Have they ever mentioned a book that changed them profoundly? Have they ever mentioned a community or some other people that they follow? Who were their mentors? Who taught them how to do things? So go back in time. And that's the best way to do it. Like, find people who have been successful in doing whatever you're trying to do and find out their source of information.
Right, right. I like that. And I also read from one of my mentors, like, it's pretty easy to also reach out to people that are kind of ahead of you, actually, as long as the gap is not that huge. Like, for example, yeah. I try to text Elon Musk, like, of course, he's not going to reply to me. But if I text someone who say whose business is, say, making 3 to 5 million a year, you know, this person would probably, you know, like me and would be honored to, you know, chat a little bit, you know. And also, if I am of service to him, there might also be something that I know that he could take advantage of or also learn from. It's not that difficult. So actually what he mentioned, what I remembered was that people who are kind of ahead of you 2 to 3x, like ahead of you, it's not that it's really not that difficult to reach them, and they're nice about it. And it's also very likely that even though their business revenue is 2 to 3x as yours, that they still view you as an equal in other areas of your life, right? Because at that point, you have achieved a certain level of success that also makes you, you know, kind of ahead probably in other parts of your life. Like, I have women way richer than me with businesses making 10 to 20 mil a year that come to me just candidly and ask for relationship advice, right? Or something like that. So, you know, it's cool, we're friends, but you know, in a way, in their eyes, it's also like I'm not very far off. Like, they I feel like they still feel like we're somehow peers or something.
I think that's true. I think it's, So I'm doing the same thing. I have a buddy who, one of my best friends, Ben, is this guy who's, he is doing the same sorts of things in entrepreneurship that I'm trying to do now. And I just hit him up and we just have chats about like what's going on and all of that. And I think I saw this thing, I can't remember, it was probably some guy on Instagram. Oh, that's another way to learn as an entrepreneur. Hack your Instagram. If you're not examining your own behavior and spending time figuring out, oh, if I spend an hour on Instagram or on Twitter every day, like, and you're only following, like, you know, sports teams and celebrities, well, like, change that. Like,
right,
entrepreneurs and, you know, accounts that, like, you know, actually teach you things, and boom, you're, that hour a day is now a little bit more productive. But in any case, so I saw a thing on Instagram via some entrepreneur that said the first million is really tough in revenue. The second million is inevitable after you've reached the first. So I totally see how that plays into what you're saying about them, about someone who's 2 or 3x whatever you are, where you're at, then see you as an equal, because it's, the gap may seem far, you know, on paper, but not really in terms of time, effort, and any other metrics you could measure that.
Yeah, so it's not like, well, I would love, you know, if people can take away anything from that, like, don't be intimidated by like reaching out to these people and kind of get a little, obviously be mindful of their time, obviously, like, don't hit them up like all day for every problem you have in your business, like, they're not your coach, but that's definitely something that's super valuable, that's a very like low risk, almost low effort thing to do for like the maximum amount of results.
Yeah. And I think also, I'll give a more extreme distance example. One of the opportunities I'm looking at right now is a ski resort. And I went to Big Sky, Montana, and had like a dinner on the mountain with my girlfriend at the time. And the COO of the company that operates Big Sky and a bunch of other resorts around the states was sitting at our table. It was this, you know, big round table, and there's a bunch of them. And we just got to talking. I was like, I would love to just go skiing with you tomorrow. Can we exchange numbers? And he was like, yeah, this old dude who's like accomplished and done, and, you know, with his career. And he rips, by the way. I could be struggling to keep up with him. And I was like, that was so much fun. We got a beer afterwards. And I, you know, I was like, if I'm ever in town, I'll hit you up. He's like, absolutely. He let us stay at his place. It was so cool. years later, here I am looking at, you know, acquisition opportunities of a ski resort. And I messaged him. I'm like, hey, you know, it's Alex. I don't know if you remember me. I'm, you know, we just started talking. I'm like, hey, listen, I would love to pick your brain about some stuff, because I'm like looking at getting into your industry. And he's like, absolutely, call me anytime. That would be great. I think the reason why, besides the fact that we had a great sort of introduction to our relationship, is the best way to, for me anyway, the best way to learn is to teach. The best way. So if I'm looking at being a mentor in any space, and specifically with entrepreneurialism, you know, there's a ton of opportunity out there. There's a ton of people who want to be mentors, not only because it's good to learn, it's good to teach in order to learn, you know, keeping your skills sharp and all of that, but also because, you know, it looks good on their resume as well, you know? So I absolutely agree with you. Like, don't be afraid of reaching out to people at all to just chat. I wouldn't use the word mentor, even if you have an established relationship, but you can have one, and it's a lot easier than people think.
Yeah, that's so true. And also, like, also don't be hesitant to invest in actual mentorship. I would also say some of my biggest turning points or needle movers in business was actually when I was in a room, and I really invested to be in a room with great people, a community of entrepreneurs, most of them ahead of me. I love to be the smallest person in the room, because, like, oh my God, it's like uphill from here, right? I'm learning from these people who are like way smarter than me, way ahead of me in the game. And it's just it's such a great experience. And to add a little bit of, you know, our topic on college, I think that's also something that these college professors kind of, fall flat on, or something like that. I don't know what the exact like English expression is, but like they're kind of behind on that, because a lot of professors don't really have direct business experience, as in owning a business, but they do like consult for businesses. Some of them consult for businesses, and some of them have just been like academes or like scholars like all their lives, and they love business, and they read and they update themselves with whatever is new, but without experience and without basically earning all your battle scars, the conversations are just different.
Totally agree. Yeah. Without practical experience, like real world experience. Yeah. I heard, I can't remember where, the ones who can't do teach. I hate that so much. That's in part what made me want to be a college professor, because I teach the things that I have done in my professional life.
Yeah.
You know, ad hoc professors, you know, it's to, I don't mean to give that quote credit, but my favorite professors were always the ad hoc people, the ones who like have a full-time job still and come to teach classes on the side. And like, that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to pay it forward, but I still, at the same time, it doesn't mean that people who teach for a living haven't done it before, or at least can teach you something about, you know, what they're, you know, what's in the book. Actually, speaking of that, it's going to sound so bad. You know the story of the Catch Me If You Can guy who taught law school? I think it was law
school. I didn't
know
he taught. Yeah. What about him?
Yeah, The FBI agent was asking, like, how did you teach a class? He's like, all I got to do is stay in like one class ahead of the students.
Oh, right.
And just studied it beforehand and then taught them. And like, you know, I don't know if we, to make this come all the way around full circle, it's like, that may sound like it sucks, but if, you know, in that scenario, I think it's important to realize that all that guy is doing is reading the textbook and then teaching from it.
Right.
So you could easily just read the textbook and get the same thing. I know that's like a weird, crazy example, but like, just interesting.
Yeah, no, I definitely hear you. I actually got reminded of this funny experience in college where, I'm not kidding, we were reading case studies in one of my management classes, and the case was in the 1960s. I'm not kidding. Mm-hmm. It was a great case. You know, of course, we had some like thoughts, but in my head, I'm like, well, the internet you know, there's a lot of things that changed then,
The
like the
internet.
internet, and I don't know, like TVs are colored now. Like, that's such a different time. Why are we still studying this? It's 2008, like literally. And it was just so weird that we were discussing that. And so I would say that's also another criticism that I would have against college. No matter, you know, I loved it, obviously. Overall, I loved my experience. But a lot of the material is just not updated enough.
Well, let's take that argument even further. Like, the entire model of modern education hasn't been updated
True.
since the Industrial Revolution, right? And that, I think that is the main criticism that most people, especially entrepreneurs, have against today's, I say modern education. I shouldn't say modern. I'll say against the
Contemporary,
contemporary
yeah.
educational system, right? Because there are several people who are upending that contemporary system that I would call more modern, that is a little bit better, I think. But still, the point remains that I couldn't agree with you more. I was actually talking with my girlfriend about this last night. I picked up, remember picking up A Tale of Two Cities because it was a classic, right? And
Right.
in school in English, you're like, oh, it's really the classics, like, you know, the Pearl and Steinbeck and the Mice and Men and whatever, all that stuff.
Right.
And to your point, these books are written so long ago about, and most of them about times before their time. And you're like, okay, like, who made the decision that this was a classic? And how long ago did that person die? Like,
Yeah.
I read A Tale of Two Cities and I'm like, this is not great. Like I don't understand, like, why. I mean, I'm not an English guy, so it's not for me. But at the same time, like, our contemporary education system required everybody to read that book.
Yeah.
I was like,
Yeah.
what?
No, I remember reading Shakespeare even, right, in high school or something. And people were just, and it was even like there was a lot of even like bad lessons in these books. It was so outdated. And like, why didn't we move on from that? Like, there's 72 genders now. Like, what are we doing?
What they say about startups, right? Evolve or die.
Yeah, like innovate or die or something like that.
That's right. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of crazy. I mean, obviously that's probably tied to some government mandate or some moves from the
Yeah.
government to change that, right? But then again, like, what is the and you would think that the incentive is huge enough. Like, if I was the government, this is obviously oversimplified. And then like, this is not working out. Our youth is stupid, or they don't know what to do with their lives. And then, and also a little criticism with like going to college in America, it's like giving like $50,000 loan to a kid, like that's like a child who's like can't even buy beer. So you won't allow this kid to buy beer, but you'll give him a $50,000 loan. And he doesn't know what to do with his life. And so that's so weird that that works somehow.
And now we have this crazy, crazy student loan debt crisis that we're considering. It's so bad, we're considering a forgiveness program.
Yeah, and so here's the thing, right? So I think the argument for like, yeah, it's okay for you to borrow this money because after college, you're gonna make it back. And we're so confident that you will. And this is why we're giving this money to you. I think that was kind of like the principle or the assumption behind like the student loan. But it hasn't worked. It hasn't worked out. A lot of people are in their mid 30s, late 30s, and still in debt. And it's a difficult, you know, crutch to just kind of have.
I think that is also, yeah, I mean, there is, I mean, this is a whole other conversation, right? I feel like every 5 minutes we have another, like, could be an entire conversation statement. But like, the educate the financial institutions that sort of, I don't know, I keep on going back and forth between, like, it's shitty that financial institutions sort of like support this, but at the same time, the amount of colleges And the amount of college graduates has increased so much over time that we have this process of academic inflation where, if you have an undergraduate degree, it's no longer good enough for that same job that was, 30 years ago. Now it requires a graduate degree. And same thing for the graduate degree that requires a JD and then whatever the doctorate and so on and so forth, right? That's just going to keep happening as long as the system that we have currently changes.
Yeah, plus there's certifications, right? Like there's more certifications, there's new jobs, there's new positions coming out. So it's not the promise of college kind of has got you, quote unquote. It's not real. I would say that in that sense, college is not a very good ROI, especially in countries where college is not free. And where it's like expensive. Obviously, in a lot of, some places in the world, college is free and high quality. And so, like, kudos to them for that. Looking back, if say you didn't go to college, what would you have done in that age where you went to college? And now that you know what you know, what would you have done?
Traveled.
Travel.
Yeah.
And why is that?
I would have seen more of the world that I hadn't seen yet. I would have tried to like there I don't another quote that I don't remember where it's from. I'm full of this non-informative information today. Travel is like the higher education for the edu for the mind of whatever, right? Like it's another form of education. And I went straight from college or straight from high school to college, just college to, whatever. I didn't have that gap year. And fortunately I was able to do the digital nomad thing, but it's not the same. It's not like traveling with the same intention. I would have traveled, and I do feel strongly that that really helps people, especially I'm an American, right? So I think most Americans don't travel enough. And I think that is really educational to see the world through the lenses, and it's to see other places in the world that are so vastly different than yours. I would have gone to places that are way more different than what I had known. Most of my travels as a youth were in Europe, which is pretty damn close to America. And I don't think that's good. So yeah, I would have traveled more. I would have tried to educate myself more from that respect. And along the way, I mean, again, like there's no way I would have known this back then, but like how, like trying and find places where I would have been inspired. And I do think by ex like to your point earlier, exposing myself to other disciplines and other places and other opportunities would have probably helped, but who knows?
Yeah, that's true. I like that. Actually, travel is, there's a lot to gain from traveling. Even, as I'm thinking of, say, starting a family and having kids, I think it's great when kids are exposed to different cultures. They start to become more tolerant and learn about the world and see the world from other people's eyes, right? Like even the simplest things, it's like doing this one thing is rude in this country, and it's not rude, it's flattering to this country because of this nuance. And like learning those things are super valuable. So I like that idea. For me, in my opinion, if I was at that age, obviously I was a teenager, I had a lot of energy. I think my favorite thing to do looking back is I would love to be an assistant of a really like high level person. I
Oh,
don't
that's
care if
good.
I was like picking up his or her laundry, or setting up calls. I actually was an executive assistant for a little bit for this like super powerful Harvard educated lady, but she passed away pretty early. She passed away like her early 30s or something like that. And so I was really sad about that. And then there was this politician in my city that I really looked up to, and I applied to work for her at her office, also as an assistant. But there were just like other assistants that were higher level than me because I was too young. But if I could find anyone that I can just kind of be in their world, I could work like 12 hours a day. I would dedicate my life to that person and just learn everything I can for those like 4 years. I think that would be like a great substitute for college education, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a great answer. I didn't think about that. Like being exposed to greatness, right? That's kind of what you're saying.
Yeah. Just by being in their world. Like I had one previous mentor who had a lot of success, like super multi-millionaire guy. And I remember him taking me to this negotiation where he was buying a jet or about to buy a jet. And just being
Wait,
in that
how old
room.
were you when this was going down?
Let me see. 2019. 29, something like that, 29, 30.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So it was a great, like just being in that room, just the energy, just how like he was trying to like I think it was lease or buy a jet with someone. Like they were gonna split the use of this jet. And so they were negotiating with this guy from California and who owns like a CBD empire, and just being in that room was great. I felt like it changed me on a cellular level.
Oh wow, that's awesome. Okay.
Yeah, so I think if my life was filled with experiences like that, right, it would like change the trajectory of my life.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's good. I really think, yeah, so there's a few, going back to what we were saying earlier about like how do you inspire inspiration, that sounds like a pretty good one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Being exposed to greatness, or being exposed to, so we got, what do we got right now? We got travel, we have, or like being exposed to other cultures, being exposed to greatness. I think novelty is another one. That's one way to inspire inspiration. And then there's probably a handful of others, probably a dozens of others. The title of my next book.
Yeah.
Inspiring inspiration.
Yeah. Huh, let me actually think about that, because I'm an elder sister, and I would love if I can also, you know, inspire inspiration. I think there's really no other way to persuade someone enough to be inspired. I think it has to come from them. So I feel like the best we could do really is to provide a space for people to feel safe in sharing their desires. And and this goes to entrepreneurs whose partners are, you know, thinking of entrepreneurship, or entrepreneurs who have children that are thinking of entrepreneurship. Maybe if you just kind of if we just as entrepreneurs provide a space for them to share their thoughts and share what they want, and in a meaningful way let them know that it is important that they are clear on these things, I think that's already like very special. One example I can think about was one of my sisters is a nurse, and from my world as an entrepreneur, I thought, you know, you bust your ass being a nurse. It's 12 hours a day, like long shifts. It's very tiring, and that environment is not the best emotionally, in my opinion, obviously, because I was like, oh, you're like around death and illness, so like why would you want to be there? And in my head and in my world, why would you do that instead of being an entrepreneur? Like I couldn't understand. Mm-hmm. But and so she started, I recruited her to be my manager in one of my businesses a while ago, and she liked the money part and she enjoyed it, but she told me eventually that she did not enjoy entrepreneurship, and that she found more meaning and value in her job as a nurse. And so kind of broke my heart, but also I, you know, I love my sister. And so I let her be, of course, and I told her, she has my support. And now she's still a nurse. She's been a nurse for a couple of years. And honestly, I've never seen her happier or more fulfilled. And I feel like in that moment, I just, you know, she was inspired to share with me how she actually felt instead of trying to not let me down. So I felt like that was where my answer was coming from, in like, what is the best way we could do to inspire inspiration? I think just providing that space to let them know that they can be themselves or something like that.
I I agree, and I'm going to take that one further too.
Mm-hmm.
Because I it's funny you say that just quickly. Like my brother, I feel similarly about my brother. Like he's not super happy in his career, but he's like doing fine. Like he's all right. And I want to be like, God, you could do so much more. You know what I mean? Like you could like kick so much ass like elsewhere, but he's not doing bad, you know?
Right.
But yeah. So anyway, but yeah, secondly, I think this is an important question, not just for entrepreneurs, not just for students, but also more practically for employees. How do you get an employee to care more? And there's a shitload of books written about that. I'm sorry, can we curse on this podcast? I
Ah, yes,
curse.
of course.
Okay. So yeah, but like I found, and this is one of the reasons why I pay so close attention to this question, is that like one of the main things that I found in my employees is that giving them that space to be creative and allowing them to move forward in a direction that they choose is super valuable. Not just important, like super valuable, as in like someone has an idea for something, and even if I think it's going to be a bad idea, I'm typically more wrong because of the passion and the time that they put into it because they feel ownership over it. That is inspiring, right? It's like, hey, listen, like I know I don't like I'm not going to say no. I'm not just like go for it. Like if someone comes to me and says, I got this idea, and in my head, I'm going like, that is the dumbest fucking idea I've ever heard. I'm still gonna be like, but we've never done it before. I'm still gonna be like, go for it. Yeah. Like, see what you got. Like, if it's relatively low cost to the business, like the downside isn't that bad. Like, why not give them a shot at it and let them be surprised by it as the owner, I mean. But that has done a lot for our business specifically, allowing people to have the space to be wrong or be right, but at least to go discover on their own.
Yeah, I like that. I think that a lot of people also, when they approach a job, they're more scared of making a mistake than they are with the rewards of winning something or doing something right. It's kind of like the loss. What do they call that? Like the feeling of loss is more painful than
Worse than
gain.
the, yeah. Yeah,
Yeah, like a loss bias or something. I forgot the term, but for example, in my culture, I have an outsourcing company and we hire virtual assistants, project managers, a lot of teammates, remote professionals in the Philippines. And most of our clients are in United States, Canada, UK, Australia. Most of our clients have this common comment about Filipinos, and they say they're super helpful and nice, but they're so meek and shy, and sometimes they would keep things to themselves, and then sometimes if there's something wrong, they would say everything's fine, but until it's like the last minute, and then they would just like tell me, but it's like so hard for me to fix it. In my opinion, there's two things. Like, yes, our culture is really like more. I would say not as extroverted as most cultures, and not as direct. But also, I ask my clients, did you communicate to them that you trust their intelligence and that you have confidence in their abilities? And did you tell them that it is actually encouraged to communicate these things? Because it goes two ways, right? It goes two ways. A lot of Filipinos are like just as smart, just as skilled. And now people are actually not outsourcing to the Philippines just because it's a little more it's like inexpensive compared to hiring in the States, for example, but also because we have the same skills like in the Philippines, and the quality of work is the same, but there's an advantage to the value of the currency, and then businesses in America, for example, can re leverage how much like higher quality people they can get for someone that they would pay, say, a minimum wage in their state. So, in my business,
what I do to inspire that, you know, inspiration, good ideas, new ideas, is I constantly just remind them that and actually verbally say, I trust you. So for example, when my operations manager asked me this morning, like, should I do this or that? And I just literally replied to some of her questions. I trust you. Go ahead, do it. And we have an onboarding where every time we onboard a contractor, an employee, we always tell them, we always have that talk with them that, like, you're here for a reason. Like, X people applied for this job, but we chose you because you are the best and we trust you. We have confidence in your skills, in your intelligence, in your experience, in your integrity. So we have this kind of like coaching conversation with them, emphasizing this. And once again, I feel like these feelings of being trusted, of someone being confident about your intelligence. Once again, I feel like this is something that's not instilled in college education. I mean, like, okay, kid, come here, learn this. If you don't learn this, you'll have grades that will probably tell the world you're stupid. Like, it's mostly that.
is there any way to, like, it's to say, like, you know, we trust, like, you it's like, it's very authoritative. Like, here's the material, study it, and we'll give you a test and you do it. You can't tell the teacher that the question is stupid. You have to answer the question.
Right.
Yeah. There is no, I get to choose my own direction at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this is why the crazies, right? The crazies in school make the most kind of difference when they get out of school. I have college, I have, I don't know, high school or the people who are like book smart, had high grades. They lead pretty conventional lives and kind of the trajectory of their life is just kind of steady. And a lot of them actually tell me that they wish they took a different approach. Like in college and in high school, they were definitely the star students. They had great grades. But they would admit to me that it was like, you know, I just memorized things and I was just diligent.
Right, right.
I just studied when I should, you know, when it's never late. But a lot of them are actually really unhappy, even in their careers. Actually, one valedictorian I know reached out to me, said she wanted to kill herself one day. Yeah, it was pretty tough. It was pretty tough. And this girl is very like smart in school and she played an instrument really well, very talented. And it was painful for me to even like hear that, like what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's painful me to hear you talk about that now.
I know. It's crazy.
The whole it's like we teach, it's like the, I'm gonna rag on the institution again. It's like we so Ken Robinson has this book. Ken Robinson, I believe, has the most watched TED Talk of all time. He has a book called The Element, which is fantastic. It's actually, wait, Carl, do you know about this book?
Actually, no, but I know of Ken Robinson because of that famous TED Talk or something.
Okay, yeah. So the book is all about how to figure out what your calling is, which is super closely related to a lot of the stuff we've been talking about.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's really good. My girlfriend and I recently read it together. But in any case, he talks a lot about this, and I agree that we educate students out of creativity. Exactly what we were kind of saying before. We teach you to answer the questions, you know, and that's it, right? Yes, there are classes that sort of like you can, you know, study the creativity and like maybe like design or whatever the case is, but like, Most of the classes you are in are going to be like, you know, we educate a lot of our students, a lot of our youth, with a heavy emphasis on STEM, right? That's like every culture just puts more value on math, science, technology, right? And not on the arts and not on the sort of right brain disciplines that I think are becoming and going to be more valuable, right? in the modern and near future societies. I think it's a real shame that I don't mean to talk bad about your friend who's a valedictorian, but like the person who answers the questions the best and sort of conforms the best are rewarded the best, the most. I have a problem with that. I think that if you blaze your own path, then and come up with a better question in to begin with, then that should be rewarded even more.
Yeah, it's kind of tricky. I remember also kind of complaining about this before, and then people would say, well, you have extracurricular in college, and also a lot of people say that thing about learning something, you have to like learn the basics and then you can veer away from, you know, when you know better. It's like being in sales, right? They teach you a script. There's a template. When you're doing a sales call, you have to do the script. After you've done enough sales calls, then you can like customize a little bit or you can be comfortable, but like just follow the formula and then you'll be fine. Like it's pretty tricky because, you know, there's a little bit of like, yes, it's useful. I agree with you. Like it's like cooking, right? Follow the recipe to the T, then you can be more intuitive, you know, after a while. Now you're just a pinch here, you know, like you don't have to like weigh everything, measure everything.
Yeah, I love that. You know what's crazy about that too, actually, that specific example? I have to, how much time do we have? Do we have some time?
You're fine, yeah.
Okay. Because I have to provide some context in order to give the story. I love this story so much. So my mom got invited. So we ate something different every single night. My mom is a fantastic cook. So my brother and I have left. She's an empty nester. And she got invited through someone, a friend of hers, into this group of women. And they're like, hoity-toity fancy, whatever, at least some of them are. And they said, hey, my mom's Katie. Like, hey, Katie, can you, you know, we're all going to, you know, get together. Can you, like, bring a few things over to, you know, for our dinner night or whatever, potluck, something like that. And she's like, yeah, sure, no problem. Whips together a few things, goes, turns out, that was her audition for what is known as the Gourmet Girls Group. It is comprised of like ex New York Times food editors and shit like that. Like these women know food and they are awesome. And in this group every night it's at someone else's house. And that woman prepares the entire meal for everyone to come over and they rotate around. And then they have some crazy Christmas party where the husbands are actually invited over as well. Black tie, the whole nine yards, right? Awesome. Love my mom. So proud of her. My girlfriend is a head chef and has Michelin stars on a resume. And my mom follows recipes to a T and executes fabulously. My girlfriend never ever looks at the recipe. It's just like we'll come up with something on the fly, like adding beets to meat, and it's like, where did that come from? She's like, I don't know, I just thought it would go good, and it's awesome, and even the color looks good together, let alone it tastes like, it's crazy. I don't know, I like, and she said to me, to tell my mom, like, she knows what she's doing, she doesn't need to follow the recipe. And I think that so clearly illustrates the generational gap in our education system.
Wow. I love that. I love that. I would still classify myself as kind of like a nerd, as in I'm a rule follower until I understand it enough to break it. Like I'm definitely on that side. And this is why, you know, in general, I still believe in college and what good it can give you. But it's obviously there's, you know, my favorite N-word is nuance. So there's still a lot of nuance that needs to be discussed, you know, along the way. And so,
yeah, for sure.
I think with cooking, I think there are girls that are, I mean, people actually, I felt like my dad also was a very intuitive cook. He never followed recipe books or something like that. I think that's also a gift, and your girlfriend probably has that, and your mom probably doesn't have that, or feels like, or she feels like she doesn't have it naturally, so she has some anxiety over some dishes. Yeah, but
Hello? Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I lost you.
Now, something to note though in that regard is confidence, right? So
oh yeah, for
if you
sure.
look at that situation, your girlfriend has a lot of confidence just winging it, and then the dish turns out well. And then your mom has a lot of confidence in following the rules, and then the dish turns out well. So
yeah,
both of them operated on a level of confidence, but it comes from different sources. And both of these sources are right, and it worked for them. So the individuality of people, again, is probably something that college doesn't consider so much with this like set system, right? If you were to, like, now you're teaching college students. If you were to change one thing or add one thing, not totally change the whole structure, but if you were to add one thing that would make college better in terms of addressing people's individualities, what do you think it would be?
Oh, if I was to change one thing about addressing individuality in college, that's tough. Are we doing this for another hour?
Well, I can give you a little bit of time. I have a thought in my head. If you want to take a little bit of time,
well, I think first of all, my brain first goes to personalized medicine, because that's been I don't know if I'd call it a trend, but
right.
It's been where things have been pivoting towards for the past 10 years, definitely the last five. It's like, my cancer is not the same as your cancer, nor is my history, nor my genes. And like, that's really important. And I think holistic medicine has become more popular because of this idea. And for me personally, it has worked. I think education and a lot of industries and a lot of aspects of our life have something to learn from this. Mm-hmm. I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about this, but I mean, the system that we have is like, here's a bunch of classes that you may or may not be interested in. Take as many as you want in college and figure it out along the way. I don't know what the answer is. I'd love to hear your opinion, though.
So like, give a free subscription to Udemy, and then like, okay, here it is. Explore whatever you want. Still come to classes, but this is your playground or something.
Playground. I like that.
For me, it's a little nerdy, but I would say if we made the libraries better in such a way that it addresses a lot of interest. Because I'm a reader, but I also believe that no one is not a reader if you give them the right thing to read. You know, there's people that are like, oh, I'm not really a reader. I'm not, you know, I don't read books. I'm more of an audible person or something. And that's fine. But I feel like if we bring back the love for libraries, and if we design libraries in such a way that you have also all the magazines there, for example, like, yeah, have a Cosmo magazine there, have The Economist, have Harvard Business Review, and have, I don't know, like a makeup magazine, like who cares, like have everything, have a surfing magazine or a ski, whatever, right? That caters to a lot of interests and books and maybe more picture books. So I'm just like building the library of my dreams in my mind right now, obviously. And like a theater inside with like documentaries of like different topics, where basically a place where everyone can learn what they want to learn and what they're interested, and not just interested, okay, what they're curious about. And then you can build curiosity. Yeah. That's my pitch.
Like a discovery
board. Yeah,
discovery edu playground,
right? Like they can read Harry Potter there, or they can read the biography of James Madison, like
that is really interesting. I like that.
I mean, if you're paying the money you're paying, you should probably get something like a great entertainment center out of it.
It's interesting. I have you ever had an educational professional on this podcast before?
Let me think. I'm not sure. I think there
Because
was a
I'm
functional medicine doctor that also taught. Not sure,
okay.
actually. Yeah.
The reason why I ask is because I'm like, a lot of our answers, well, I say this all the time, and every time I like speak at a conference or whatever, it's like everybody's advice is usually given like dogma. And I admit, like, that is how you, well, how I've been taught, you and I have been talking today, right?
Right.
We could be discounting
Yes.
decades of experience
Right.
of the educational system, trying things out and realizing that something doesn't work, and then pivoting back to what does. I don't think that's true, but my point is, like, I'm only speaking from my own experience, and we could be like, there could be plenty of people try who have tried out exactly what you just described and realized, oh, well, when we add Cosmo onto the bookshelf next to, all these STEM ideas and the biography of James Madison, the biographies never get touched. I'm just spitballing, but you get where I'm coming from, right?
Yeah, but then what about because they're learning like 65 ways to give a blowjob, like a Cosmo magazine, and then they will never learn like how planes operate or something, which is like the magazine beside it.
Well, I mean, if someone has a passion for giving blowjobs, that could be a career. It's the oldest
Exactly.
one.
Exactly.
It's not.
Who was that?
There's
Who was
no
that?
shame in
Esther
that.
Perel. Esther Perel. She has kind of like a career on like explaining like sex, fidelity, and
Yeah.
pretty
And
unique.
Sue, Sex with Sue. She had a TV show, the whole thing. Yeah,
Yeah.
there's lots of opportunities in that.
I love that. So, as an entrepreneur, like in your opinion, how did you like or not like college for networking? So this is kind of another topic because networking is definitely a big thing when you become an entrepreneur. Did you like what you learned in college? Did you learn anything important, or was it totally useless in terms of networking?
In terms of networking, like learning about networking
Yeah, or just
or
maybe
practicing networking.
or maybe even like raising your EQ or
Yeah,
confidence.
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, for me, it's a little bit, I feel like I should talk about networking first, but, and then we can talk about entrepreneurialism. From my perspective, anyway, like I needed to get a job first. Like, I graduated in 2008, right? It was like nobody was getting jobs. Nobody was, there was no VC money flying around then. So, like, I wasn't even trying to be an entrepreneur back then. It was all of my networking efforts just were just about getting a job. And I do think that in that realm, like, I don't think it's very rare that I've gotten a job via applying in a traditional way. Almost every single one of my jobs has been through someone that I've known or through my network. Now, I'll say that, like, in doing networking so much and going to events and going to conferences and speaking at conferences, I definitely have learned how to do it well, and I think that has served me as I've become an entrepreneur very much. Because it's not like the attention of entrepreneurs, or rather, more accurately said, business owners, is in high demand, I think. I mean, like, I can't, like, on all different levels, like, I say this all the time, I can't walk 10 steps out of the office of my business without being interrupted or chased down like five times by five different people for five different things. And those are just my employees. Like, little, like, and then, like, my friends who live in Playa, like you and Alex, like, you guys, like, are good at like seeing me, and if you see me walking fast or something, like he's like wave and say, hey, whatever, like I got shit to do, right? Like I love to hang out with you guys, I just can't right now. But like there's a lot of people out here who are like, oh my God, the owner, let's go hang out with the owner. I'm like, I don't want to say no, they're important patrons and they're loyal, like but I got shit to do. And then on top of that, there's people who want a job who are not your employee. Like there's so many different groups of people who want your attention as this effectively the CEO or the owner of an operator of a business. And doing networking with the people that matter, I shouldn't, I sh God damn it, I should not, I take that back. Not the people that matter on at the business like operator level, right? That is hard to come by. Like you don't see like okay, I'll give you an example. Like other business owners of like adjacent like neighbors for even example. Like other like we're basically a bar, right? Other bar owners that we could like hang out with, or other hostel owners that we could like create deals with, or like I went wakeboarding this morning. I talked to someone at the front desk about possibly bringing a trip of our page of our guests out there on a group trip, and she would not even give me the manager's information, let alone the owners. Like it's really really tough to get past the gatekeepers and actually network. Where when it matters, that's really what I mean. Like the people where you want to network with, not the people who matter don't matter. I love you and Alex. I hope you guys matter to me. I hope you know
Of course.
that.
Almost scared of getting canceled.
So yeah, like it is really really tough. It is really really tough to get net to do networking, but like the persistence of it all, and like it's a definitely different style than when you're trying to get a job. But like I think there's a few nuggets that I would say like to anyone trying to network, especially as an entrepreneur, is like don't fucking call it networking. It's
That's number one.
it's yeah, like it's so bad. Like it instantly is like, what can I get out of you? Is like the feeling, right? That you get. But like I think overall, and I know plenty of VCs and like sorry, venture capital people and business owners who like the number one thing you need to do in any business relationship is see how you can help the other person. That's the most important thing. Not help yourself. It, like that will come naturally as a result of trying to help the other person. And whenever I've done any kind of networking, just like I did this morning, all I did was talk to them about how can I bring you guys more customers. I have young athletic people who are looking for stuff to do in Playa, and this could be one of them. And I didn't even ask, like, maybe we can take a cut, or maybe we can, like, you guys can like pay us per head, or whatever. Like, nothing. Like, I just want to give you customers. Like, the rest of that stuff can be figured out later.
But also, like, I want to mention this. There's also that, that also kind of a greasy feeling when someone networking is asking you, how can I support you? How can I help you? But they say it in such a very like inauthentic way that they don't really mean it. They just kind of want to show. There's also that little like moment sometimes, like, and that's why I also never go to like networking events if it is called a networking event. It's
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
ew, like we're
Yeah, I
past
should.
the time of, I don't know, like, anyway,
Yeah, that's totally true. Like, it's authenticity is king. Like, you can't roll. I didn't actually go. I'm saying what I just said for effect of the podcast, right? I didn't
No,
actually go to
I hear
them and
you.
say and play, like, give my old like wink and a gun. I'm like, I'm gonna bring you more customers. What do you think about that?
I have nothing to gain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That two little Jedi way. These aren't the droids you're looking for. Yeah, I have nothing to gain here.
I think I would consider myself kind of a pretty good networker, but only because I am more extroverted than most people. And
That's a good point.
because of my training as a writer, I am genuinely interested in people's lives. Like, and I'm not like, I love reality shows. I love like, I'm really like, I love like knowing people's lives and then learning about them and hearing stories. And I think that's pretty makes it e more easy for me. But also, I think when
when I look back on these skills, public speaking, communication, writing, I'm very, very grateful that I actually honed these skills in college. I did a lot of public speaking, and I also had to train. So I did debate in college. I competed in different debate formats. So super
Nice.
nerd.
Yeah.
And you know, when we moved up in like our, you know, like when I became a senior, a junior, we would coach the sophomores and the freshmen in the debate team. And so that made me like learn how to be a good coach, how to teach. So a lot of like really good interpersonal skills that I learned in college that I'm super duper grateful
Yeah.
for. So
That's really good. Yeah, that's a really good point. And
another reason to take advantage of college.
yes. I feel like every time we say something good about college, I immediately think about something negative about college. And I feel bad
And
about that, but
no, this is why the podcast works. Because like people can
it's
see both sides.
Yeah. Okay, so if you were going to answer the question of why you went to college, would you ever say, oh, well, because of the, you know, extracurricular side activities and in
No.
intramural sports and the interpersonal relationship building and the speaking skills I did from debate class? Like, no,
No,
that
honestly.
is not. And you said this earlier. It's like they
Yeah.
have a marketing problem, right? Modern colleges are better at what they say what they don't say they do and what they do
Yeah.
say they do.
Exactly. And that's also why a lot of it, you know, when you're delivering a service, right? It's a service business. Like you go there, they deliver a service, which is like the classes and all that, the teachers providing this service. And the heart of every service business is expectation management. So what is the expectation
Yeah.
of you going to college? What do people tell you? So they expect you to go to classes, and then they tell you, what do you expect after college is you'll have a job lined up for you and you're going to be comfortable. And we're even going to lend you money because we believe that you're going to be fine. I think that's the expectation that they want to communicate. So you just kind of go to college having that expectation.
Yeah. I think that's exact. I mean, and that has been the message for decades.
Right.
Maybe more than decades, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. To be
Yeah.
honest with you, I did college because I wanted to, I it was just the reasonable thing to do after high school. And in my country, in the Philippines, it's really hard to get ahead without a college education. So it's kind of like, and I felt it was an amazing privilege to even go to the school that I went to, and I wanted to please my parents. So obviously, you're absolutely correct. It had nothing to do with the things that I actually learned and I actually benefited from college.
Let me ask you this. In the Philippines, what percentage of people in the United States, for example, have a college degree versus don't? And comparatively, what percentage of people in the Philippines have a college degree versus don't? Just total bar.
Gosh, probably I would say 60%. Oh fuck,
Okay.
that's probably a wrong number. But in the Philippines, let me see.
Well, honestly, my real question is like, less or more, or significantly less, or significantly more. That's ultimately what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
I'm curious about.
Oh, my numbers are like super wrong.
Are you Googling?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with it's significantly less than 60%.
Yeah.
In the States. What is it?
Yeah, here the total of 19% had finished at most a high school education in the Philippines.
Okay.
19% at most.
Oh, 19.
Yeah. 10% are academic degree holders. Wow. So I'm so wrong on that. I just had this idea that a lot of people believe that if you didn't go to college, you wouldn't be able to make it or something.
10% of people in the Philippines have a college degree. What's the source on that?
Philippine Statistics Authority. It's the official
Okay,
like,
that
government.
sounds legit.
So it sounds legit, yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna dig in into this more actually.
But what is it? What's the number in the States?
Oh, no. Let's ask the Oracle.
ChatGPT.
I actually have ChatGPT right now. Hold on, I'm doing it. Let's see if ChatGPT has a different answer than Google.
Yeah.
Okay, Google, how many people or what percent of people in the United States have a college degree? I'm gonna copy that query and paste it into ChatGPT. Okay, Google said Forbes says 37, 38% in 2009, 54% in 2021. That's pretty good. Well, it's a lot more than I thought. Okay, ChatGPT says, according to the U.S. Census Bureau 2020, 35.7% holds a, over the age of 25 holds a bachelor's degree or higher. So you're missing out 23 and 24 and 20 and 22-year-old graduates if they went right after school. So okay, not terribly different, but sounds like it's between 35 and 55%.
Yeah, so
Now.
that's pretty. So in that sense, in that way, I wonder if most people are, because in my country, in the Philippines, it's really it's I don't know, this is just probably my reality, right? My personal reality. It was just very hard for me to imagine someone to get like a good job beyond something clerical or something without a college education. But I guess there are kids that stand out and and or start their own businesses or have some hustle, some sort of hustle that doesn't require a college education. So that's that number was shocking to me, actually. I thought it would be more because it thought it would be more.
I think that kind of highlights, sort of what I was saying earlier about, the academic inflation thing, sort of piggybacking off of your point earlier.
Yeah, and then how many women also like give up their, even with a college education, give up their careers to have a family,
With
right?
children, yeah.
Yeah, so what would they even do with some of their college degrees? I think it has been a pattern that women, a lot more women graduate now and get more degrees, right? For a while now, I think.
Yeah.
More women than men.
Yeah, I think, yeah, but if you looked at those numbers, you see that increase in women getting degrees would be significantly higher than men, steeper slope than men.
Yeah. Very, very interesting for sure. Okay. Well, is there anyone, any relative or any younger, sibling or whatever that asked for your advice? What would you tell them about college? Like in one go, in one like paragraph. What's your advice for them?
Yes, sorry, by the way, the power just came back on, and immediately all these power tools started on in our neighbors right next to us. I don't know if you can hear that. It's super obnoxious. So if my sibling or someone younger considering college asked me advice about college, what would I tell them? I would say either go to a college. Well, actually, this is a point we hadn't, you mentioned it briefly, but we hadn't really talked about it much after that, was which is the network of alumni of a college is insanely valuable. I think that's probably the biggest determinant of price, at least of American colleges anyway, more than anything else. So I think that's why you see Harvard, Stanford, all these guys, those guys, like, way more expensive, and I think there's value in that. Like, if you go to those schools, you're going to see a heck of a lot more entrepreneurial, candidates there. You're going to see a heck of a lot more successful graduates coming out of there, and therefore people who are willing to hire there, and the jobs that surround those, the opportunities that at the employers that surround those schools are going to be better. Just all over. So my advice would be either go to an excellent school, like top 5% maybe, or don't go at all, or do something else that you know, it, or travel first, or figure something else out. I would not spend time going to spending that much amount of money in the United States anyway for a college that is anything less than that,
right?
Or go for free overseas somewhere,
right? Get a
scholarship, or go for less.
Yeah, or
yeah,
something.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I hear you for sure. I think that's a very sound advice. And yeah, I totally forgot. I liked my, in actual networking, I actually liked the people that I met in college, because my classmates, because I took a business course, a lot of my classmates were children of business owners and of actual business owners in my city. And so it was a great, when I was starting a business, it was a great way for me to, for a set of people to vouch for me. So that's another plus to your argument of just choose a really good school or don't go. So yeah, the network, the people, the quality of teachers, you know, really like do your research, right? Like I feel like some people just decide. So this is my pet peeve also, or like don't you, doesn't this bother you how a lot of people decide very, very important things based on very mundane factors? Like a lot of people choose where their kids go to school because of how close it is to their house. You know, like, yeah, that's, yeah, it's great. It's a 10-minute bus ride, but the education shit, you're ruining your kids' like life, possibly.
Yeah.
So definitely do not decide where to go to college or whether you go to college or not from, yeah, from like stupid,
right?
But that's where your crush goes or something.
Yeah. That's tough. I think a lot of the answer, my answer to that question would also be in, it would lie in the preparation in the years leading up to that question.
Mm-hmm.
Leading up to deciding where to go to college, right? It would be spending, trying to imbue a sense of, well, a self-driven sense of direction, or some kind of inspiration, or like discovering what inspires them ahead of time, so that they can make a decision on the basis of a school. So they know, like, okay, if I'm into engineering or whatever, or if I'm into robotics, you know, go to MIT, you know, over Harvard or whatever, you know, something like that, like a school that matters to what matters to you.
Right. I love that. I love that for sure. Yeah. And the, cause I actually remember some of my classmates who took up a business course, but they wanted to be like a fashion designer. And I just felt that. And then to their, you know, to their point, they said like, oh, I'm just going to take a business class because when I, a business course in this 4 years of their life, because when I become a fashion designer, because my parents wanted me to do this. And also when I become a fashion designer, I need to know how to run a business. And I'm like, yeah, sure. I agree with that. But these are the most creative, like this is the most creative, like time of your life. Or I felt like it would have been better if they just took like some sort of a design course and then take like a small business, you know, shorter business course after. Like,
yeah.
What do you really need to know when you start a business? Like just the simplest things, like how to read a P&L, basic accounting. And
yeah,
you can learn that so in 6 months.
Yeah. Oh God, that's a whole nother podcast, which is like what school should teach you, right? That's like the practical stuff of life, like basic financial literacy, you know?
Oh,
where is
yeah.
that class in high school, you know?
Oh,
in
yeah.
High school, not even college, right?
Yeah, definitely. Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, even just telling your students to read Rich Dad, Poor Dad could be a great, like, gateway drug.
Love that book. Oh, my God. Yes. Yeah, so true. Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely had
a gateway drug. That's such a good term too.
Yeah, it
okay,
is.
What are the gateway drugs to that is the same question. Like, what are the gateways to gateway drugs into industries is sort of the same question as like, how do you inspire inspiration?
Right.
maybe college should also, because it is the it is kind of like the breeding ground. It's the fertilized like soil for these kids, you know, before like that age, like you know, that is their transformation age. And this is where you kind of make decisions that will define the rest of your life. Like, even what is the age when kids can like go to the military in America? What's that, 18, 19, something like that?
18,
Yeah, so they can do that, or they can like go to college and like, so these are really, really big decisions. So I think the best things that schools can do is really help these kids to make these decisions better, like in general.
It's so true. Yeah, and you know, yeah, and not to mention the whole like any aspect of emotional and mental health in life is relegated to some counselor person who's like not even a part of the regular curriculum. It's someone sitting in a tiny little office in the office,
yeah,
part of the school, right? You know, like there's no the practicality of life is not taught in high school or college, and I think that's a big problem.
I know. Maybe they should put those 20-year-old life coaches from Tulum to be the guidance counselor.
Oh my God.
Dudes that never shower and don't wear shoes.
Oh, dreadlocks and the whole nine yards. Yeah.
Yeah, and the hat.
The hat, the flat billed hat. Like, oh my God. That's funny because it's true.
Yeah, I know. I know. Crazy. Well, yeah. Wow, that was really awesome. Definitely had a lot to think about. Maybe we should just homeschool our kids, but
honestly, like I'm thinking about it. Seriously.
Right? You love teaching anyway. Your kids will be very grateful.
Yeah. Yeah, I do love teaching. I should mention, like, the first place I learned about myself that the best place to learn is to teach is when I became a ski instructor because I love skiing. And I was like, holy shit, I learned more about skiing in that season than any other, like all my other seasons combined.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I realized I had a passion for teaching because I have a passion for learning.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, sorry. I was going to ask my one last question, but it's, well, let's reserve that for the last thought.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I seriously, like, I don't know what to do about this because I've been thinking about this about my, you know, what are my children's options going to be?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I don't know the answer, and it bothers me that I don't know the answer because I am, and this is not a college thing. This is a contemporary educational thing, right?
Yeah.
I don't necessarily want my kids to be a part of that, especially if it hasn't changed. And there are other options out there, but I don't know. I don't have you guys. Have you thought about this? I need to figure this out.
I don't know. I did have a conversation with an educator the other day. She's been like a teacher for over a decade, and she recently had some kids of her own, and she definitely still believes in like the sending kids to school, but she did say the major benefit of sending kids to school is the social part of it, like making friends, like the sports. In terms of like learning things, she says that she still makes sure that, you know, they travel. Actually, she mentioned that they travel, that her kid like reads books that he actually likes and learns about like nature and learns about like other things in different ways. She's a very like multiple intelligence person and takes like a Montessori approach to education, which and those are other obviously like nuances, right? Like me and my sisters were very like Montessori. A lot of my friends who are moms, they believe in like Waldorf education is like the thing. And and that's fine. And I think that I would just trust on the parents' genuine desire to give the best of their child. I would just say that.
Yeah.
So as a last thought, I definitely this I definitely would love to hear from you.
As an educator, what are you bringing to the table?
Well, me personally, like what am I bringing to the table to my students in my classes?
Yeah. What are you desiring
what
to,
you mean to the...
impart or leave them? What do you want to give them?
Oh, I have, I am not making this up. I say a lot of the things that I have said today in my classes when they come up. Because so first of all, what I'm doing now is technically a boot camp, but although it's a very, and it's a semester, it's actually more than a semester long in some cases, a semester long boot camp, but it's at a college. It's contracted through a company called Trilogy Ed/2U, and because these are, I teach product management and user experience design, and these industries are so new and so and change so fast, you know, with the speed of technology, that the universities, the typical program like it takes to get a class approved is, you know, it's just too, it's so grueling, it's so time consuming, they can't keep up with the speed that these industries move at. So they contract through these other companies called 2U or Trilogy, whoever, in order to teach these classes and in order to teach the boot them in a boot camp style, so that it's more information more rapidly in a shorter amount of time than you otherwise would at a college, which is very appealing. These universities don't have an offering like that, and you've seen the rise of boot camps in the past 5 or 7 years. I'm a product of those boot camps. I originally got into product management because it was too new of a program back then, or of a discipline back then. There were no graduate programs that I could even apply for. So I got into a boot camp. I was so dedicated to breaking into that industry that I can explain this at some point later over drinks, but I tripled the amount of work that I did. I listened to so many podcasts, went to so many meetups. I changed the entire, like, my mindset of what work is and could be. And my teacher of the class ended up hiring me, and he is still my mentor. He was actually here in Playa like last week visiting with a old coworker of mine. That's what I want to give my students. Not only the education of what is a modern, like, discipline and how to approach that from someone who's actually done it, as opposed to just reading from the slides, but also the real shit. This doesn't matter, even though it's in the curriculum. Like, I scrap slides from the curriculum all the time, and I'm like, this doesn't matter. Do this instead, because I've been there and I've done it. And I'll frequently go message my mentor and message the group of people that I'm with who are all in the same sort of discipline and say, like, have you guys, this literally happened, this was it 2 nights ago when I was teaching. Have you guys ever used the Kano model for feature prioritization ever? And have you ever even heard of anybody actually implementing the Kano model when you're trying to do a feature prioritization method? Two of the people came back and said, I don't even know what that is. What's the Kano model? And the rest of the people were like, I know what it is, but I've never heard of it, nor have I ever seen someone actually use it. And yet it took up the entire curriculum of my Wednesday night class because the people who are building the curriculum are course builders, whatever that discipline is called, and not professionals who have done it before. That's what I offer. And that's why I care so much about adjunct professors as opposed to lifelong professors. Those people have touched my life in ways that no other regular career tenured professor, we didn't talk about tenure, right? Like, I try to offer real world experience and true 100% authenticity to my students so that they have the same education that was given to me by my professors like Ben Gallion, like Dan Corbin, the very few people who directed my life for me when I only had an idea of where I wanted to go.
I see.
Wow. It's great that the program that you're on and you're teaching on has is definitely more dynamic than the regular, just like, you know, college class, and that they're investing in that. So
well, I don't do it with permission. I don't change
oh,
the
that's
curriculum
the
with
thing.
permission. I tell you.
Yeah. Oh, I remember
what's
this
the
time.
No, you go ahead.
I remember this time when I was, my very, very first teaching job actually was teaching English to Korean. And we had this curriculum, and then I discovered that some of the kids would not learn using that, but they learned using like play still. So there was one kid, I was like, yeah, don't tell like your Korean teacher that we're just gonna read Harry Potter right now, and I'm gonna correct your pronunciation, and if you don't understand a sentence or a verb, like ask me. And then she was just so happy. So I think I'm doing like the same thing. I was doing the same thing
Yeah.
you're doing. Like I'm looking after my students, but I'm not following what the curriculum is to the
I
team.
think there is something, yeah, I think there's something to be said for, to talk about tenure real quick. I think my tenure professors were the worst, right? They taught from a textbook and that's it, and they moved on, right? As opposed to people who care. And I try to be that. And yes, I take liberties, but I don't do so on my on a whim. Like I mentioned before, like I went and asked a dozen other people in the industry, like, is this the right thing to do? Like, to make sure I'm validated before I make a change like that. Like, I don't want to be screwing with kids' lives, with people's lives. So, but I figured this was, and this is one example of many, this Kano thing, but like the amount of times that I've like adjusted a curriculum slightly in order to be more truthful or just set off the cuff. Like, I know the slide says this and that may be true, but here's some more color on many situations you may encounter in the real world where it may not be true. And that authenticity, I think, is worth its weight in gold. Because of, you know, because if you have someone there who's teaching you it based off their own beats.
Right. Yeah. I think that's and not just that, if they're really like genuinely concerned of imparting what they think the students need to succeed, you know, whatever version of success they have in their heads, that's definitely a very valuable thing.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, cool. Well, this has been a super awesome, obviously very rich conversation about college education. And I feel like a lot of the, we're definitely given a lot to think about for our entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs who have kids who are, you know, probably deciding on that. But then again, I want to emphasize that, you know, Alex, to our listeners, Alex and I are just normal people. We're not educational professionals. We are not. There's a lot of things that we don't know, but we are just sharing our opinion based on our experiences, not just in the business, in education, both as educators and also as students. So what's next for you, Alex? Is there anything that you wanted to share, anything you want to invite our listeners to check out?
Oh man. I have so much crazy stuff coming down the pike. I don't even know where to, I can't even say. Oh God, no. I don't have anything like official yet that, or anything that I would want to share yet, but I am pretty heavy on use on Instagram, and I do I've stopped doing it now, but I used to post all the time about product management and UX design and stuff like that at Alex Bose. That's kind of it. Like I'm at Bose on Twitter with an A in the middle. And I honestly, like, these opportunities that I'm looking at right now are just, it's too early stage for me to want to say anything at all, but I appreciate you asking.
Well, yeah. Well, thank you. I feel like some people would be interested in following your journey. Following you, well, I would just keep it simple to anyone here listening who wants to visit Playa del Carmen. Definitely check out Why Not Rooftop Hostel. It is one of the funnest parties. Have a drink with Alex. Have a drink with me if you find us there. If you don't find us there, then still have a drink there. There's a lot of amazing, interesting people that you could also learn from, you know, in your journey. So yeah, I would say that.
Thank you. Thanks, Carl. This is awesome. I appreciate it so much.
Likewise, this has been super awesome. We definitely have a lot to talk in person with a beer in between us. But thank you for gracing my podcast. I had so much fun. And to all of our listeners, thank you for staying till the end. I hope that you love this conversation. Follow Alex on Instagram. Also, you can send in your comments, your suggestions. You can also find me super easily on Instagram. It's Carla Stefan. And Carla Singson on Facebook. I'm very active on both platforms. And yeah, so I'll see you around. And to everyone listening, see you once again next Monday for another episode of None of Your Business. Thank you and bye-bye.
So it's a wrap. To my entrepreneur friends, I hope that you found this episode interesting and enjoyable. I know I did. Big thanks to our sponsor, Proximity Outsourcing, for making this possible. If you need to outsource anything in your business so you can scale fast and easy, visit proximityoutsourcing.com and check out their solutions. If there's any topic that you want to request, feel free to reach out. I only have two conditions. You tell me why you find it interesting, and you promise it's not business talk. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, and leave us a comment or review because you're cool like that. This is your host, Carla, and thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for your interest in fun stories. Now we can get back to business. See you next week. And remember, everything here is none of your business.